A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You're three episodes into a docuseries, and you realize nothing has happened since minute 12 of episode 1. That's not storytelling. That's a business model. Daniel's been stewing on this, and he wants a top 10 countdown of the worst offenders. Not badly made, not boring subjects. The ones that flatly didn't justify the number of installments they got. The padding. The 3-minute recap at the top of every episode of the thing you watched 20 seconds ago.
The dread sets in around episode 2. You check how many are left, and it's 6. 6 more episodes. And you've already learned everything the series actually has to say. But you're in it now. You've invested 2 hours. The sunk cost fallacy has its hooks in you. So you keep watching, not because you're engaged, but because stopping feels like admitting you wasted your time. Which you did. And you know you did. But you keep going anyway.
Daniel wants us to name names. He asked for a top 10 countdown of the worst docuseries by unjustified runtime. Not badly made, not boring subjects, but series that flatly didn't earn their episode count. Right. Because someone's gonna hear Tiger King at number 1 and say, but that was entertaining. And it was. That's not the point. You can be entertained by something that's also structurally indefensible. A magician can do the same trick 6 times, and you might clap each time. But at some point, you realize the act isn't getting any deeper. Count it down. So number 10 is bad, and number 1 is the absolute worst offender.
Production value can be high, the subject can be fascinating, and the series can still be indefensibly padded. We're judging by unjustified length.
It's not about quality. Some of these are well shot, well edited, compelling in stretches. The offense is the ratio. Runtime to actual story. Think of it like a cocktail. You order a drink. You expect a certain ratio of liquor to mixer. What these series give you is a glass full of ice, a splash of something interesting, and then 12 ounces of soda water. It looks like a full drink. It costs the same, but you're basically paying for carbonation.
Right. A 6-episode series where episodes 2 through 5 could be condensed into a 30-minute summary, that's the crime. And it's a business decision. Netflix pays producers per completed hour of content. A 4-part series at 50 minutes each is 200 minutes of content, which means a higher payout than a 90-minute documentary. And multi-part series drive more viewing hours than standalone docs. The platform's incentive is to stretch.
The padding is structural, not accidental. And it has a grammar. You start recognizing the moves. It's like learning the rules of a magic trick. Once you see how it's done, you can't unsee it. Every time you spot a drone shot that serves no purpose, every time a talking head repeats something you heard 20 minutes ago, you're watching the grammar of padding in action.
4 moves, specifically. 1, the recap at the top of every episode, sometimes 3 minutes long, summarizing what you watched 20 seconds ago if you're binging. 2, dramatic reenactments reused with different lighting or angles, same footage, new music cue. 3. Aerial drone shots of towns and landscapes doing narrative work the script couldn't manage. 4. Talking heads repeating the same information across episodes as if each one is a standalone entry for someone who just tuned in.
That last one is the tell. When the same expert says the same thing in episode 3 that they said in episode 1, you know the series was built to be watched with week-long gaps, not in a single afternoon. But nobody watches these with week-long gaps. The entire model of Netflix is built around binging. They release the whole season at once. They autoplay the next episode. The platform is designed to make you watch continuously, but the content is structured as if you're going to forget everything between installments. It's a fundamental mismatch between form and distribution.
Nobody. So with that lens in place, let's start the countdown. Number 10 is bad. Number 1 is an indictment of the entire system.
Number 10, The Tinder Swindler. Netflix, 2022. 2 episodes. Now, 2 episodes doesn't sound egregious, but the 2nd episode is almost entirely recap and reaction shots. The story is a 45-minute magazine article stretched to 2 hours. The original investigative piece that broke this story, the one the documentary is based on. You can read it in less time than it takes to watch the series. And you'll learn the same things. Actually, you'll learn more, because the article has details, the documentary cut for time. Which is ironic, given that the documentary is twice as long as it needs to be.
The specific padding mechanism hears the WhatsApp screenshots. The same screenshots are shown 4 times across the 2 episodes. 4 times. You start memorizing the timestamps. The second episode opens with a recap of the first episode that runs nearly 4 minutes. And then the remaining runtime is mostly the victim sitting in chairs looking at their phones and saying some variation of, "I couldn't believe it."
Which, to be fair, is a reasonable reaction. But we don't need to watch them have it for 40 minutes. There's a difference between bearing witness to someone's emotional experience and just watching them scroll. At a certain point, you're not learning anything about the crime or the victims. You're just watching people read text messages. I can do that on my own phone.
The story is genuinely wild. Guy poses as a billionaire, cons women out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. But the documentary doesn't have 2 hours of material. It has about 50 minutes, and the rest is filler.
Number 9. The Hatchet-Wielding Hitchhiker. Netflix, 2023. 3 episodes for a story that went viral as a 4-minute local news segment. That original news segment, the one that made Kai famous, is the entire reason anyone knows this story exists. It's 4 minutes long. It's perfect. It's a complete narrative arc in 4 minutes. And someone looked at that and said, "Let's make this 3 hours."
This one is fascinating as a case study because the central figure, a hitchhiker named Kai, who saved a woman from an attacker with a hatchet and then gave a wildly charismatic news interview, is compelling for about 15 minutes. Then the series has to fill another 2 hours and 45 minutes.
The padding technique here is, every interview is shown in full, uncut, including the interviewer's uh-huh, and right, and then, what happened. It's like they forgot editing exists. Editing is the fundamental art of documentary filmmaking. You gather hundreds of hours of footage and you cut away everything that isn't essential. This series did the opposite. It kept everything. It's less a documentary and more a data dump.
And the drone shots. Beautiful sweeping drone shots of California highways. Empty highways. Just roads. With music underneath. The series wants you to feel like you're on a journey, but you're just watching asphalt from above while a narrator says something vague about the open road. Kai was a drifter. The road was his home. Yes, thank you. I gathered that from the 35th aerial shot of Interstate 5.
The open road doing the work the story couldn't. Daniel called that one exactly.
Number 8. Murder Among the Mormons. Netflix, 2021. 3 episodes for a forgery case that could have been a tight 90-minute documentary.
This one hurts because the story itself is interesting. Rare documents, bombs, the Mormon history angle. There's a good documentary in here. You can feel it trying to get out. It's like watching a talented singer trapped in a room with terrible acoustics. The material is strong, but the structure is smothering it.
There is. And the first episode is that documentary. Then episodes 2 and 3 are the same documentary again, but slower. The recaps at the top of episodes 2 and 3 total 8 minutes of repeated content.
8 minutes! In a 3-episode series, that's nearly 10% of the total runtime devoted to telling you what you already know. Imagine reading a book where every chapter begins with a summary of the previous chapter. You'd throw it across the room.
And the centerpiece of the padding is the bombing reenactment in episode 3. It's shown from 3 different angles across 20 minutes. You watch the same explosion 3 times. Different camera positions, same event, no new information. It's like they shot coverage and couldn't bear to leave any of it on the cutting room floor. Here's the wide shot. Here's the close-up. Here's the slow-motion version. Here it's again with different music. We get it. Something exploded. Move on.
The editor was in an abusive relationship with the footage.
That's exactly right.
Just here it's again. The victim's stories are straightforward. There's no labyrinthine plot to unravel. There's no twist. There's just a guy who told people he was a spy and they believed him.
No new information. It's a Rorschach test where the series keeps asking different people what they see in the ink blot, but the ink blot never changes.
And then there's the YouTubers. The series spends a staggering amount of time interviewing internet sleuths who made videos about the case, essentially giving a platform to people who are reacting to the same content we're already watching. It's a documentary about people who made videos about the thing the documentary is about.
The Ouroboros of content. The series eating its own tail. By episode 3, you're watching a YouTuber describe a video they made where they reacted to the elevator footage, the same elevator footage you've now seen 4 times. It's layers of reaction with no new substance at the center.
Number 6. Waco, American Apocalypse. Netflix, 2023. 3 episodes.
3 episodes doesn't sound like much, but these are long episodes, and the story of the Waco siege, while complex, doesn't need 3 hours of reenactment and archival footage.
This is a structural padding technique we haven't named yet. The two documentaries in a trench coat move. They're standing on each other's shoulders wearing a long coat, trying to pass as a single coherent narrative. And you can see the seams. The padding hears the compound burning. The same archival footage of the fire, replayed from different camera angles but covering the exact same moment, across multiple episodes. You see the flames from the news helicopter shot in episode 1.
Yes. The first episode is a full 50-minute setup for a murder that gets resolved in 10 minutes of episode 2. Then the remaining 2.5 episodes are about the opioid crisis. Different subject, different stakes, different story. And the transition between them is a pharmacist who experienced both things.
Which is a real connection. I'm not saying it's fabricated. The pharmacist did lose his son to violence, and did then become involved in exposing opioid overprescription. That's a real biographical throughline. But the series doesn't earn the pivot. It just pivots, and you're left wondering if you accidentally started a new show. You check the Netflix interface. No, same title, same thumbnail, but somehow you're in a completely different documentary.
The real tell is that the first episode could be a self-contained short doc, tight, emotional, complete, but instead it's the first course in a meal that changes cuisines halfway through. You ordered Italian, you got Italian for the appetizer, and then the main course is Thai. Both good cuisines, but they don't belong on the same plate.
Those first 5 are bad, but they're warm-ups. Now we get to the series that redefine what padding means.
Number 5. The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel. Netflix, 2021. 4 episodes for a story that's essentially woman goes missing, body found in water tank. That's it. That's the whole story. Everything else is atmosphere and dead ends.
The padding in this one is legendary. It's studied. Episode 2 is entirely about the hotel's history and ghost stories, completely irrelevant to the case. Elisa Lam's disappearance is barely mentioned. You're learning about Richard Ramirez staying there in the 80s. Which is fascinating if you're making a documentary about the Cecil Hotel's dark history. But you're not. You're supposed to be making a documentary about Elisa Lam. And the series just leaves. It takes an entire episode off to do a different show.
Which is interesting if you're watching a documentary about the Cecil Hotel. But you're not. You're watching a documentary about Elisa Lam, and the series just leaves for an episode. It goes on a field trip without telling you.
Then, episode 3 features a 15-minute segment on a YouTube amateur detective's theory, a theory that goes absolutely nowhere. The series presents it with dramatic music and slow zooms on grainy footage, and then the theory collapses, and the series just moves on. No acknowledgement that they just wasted a quarter of an hour of your life on a dead end. No reflection on what it means that internet sleuths generated so much content about this case. Just, next scene.
The YouTuber isn't a source. The YouTuber is a character. And the series treats him like a key witness for 15 minutes before quietly dropping him. He gets more screen time than some of the actual investigators. He gets dramatic lighting. He gets a musical sting. And then his theory turns out to be nothing, and the series doesn't even say, we shouldn't have done that. It just moves on to the next thing.
And the drone shots. The drone shots of the hotel exterior appear in every single episode. Same building, same angle, sometimes at night, sometimes during the day. The building isn't doing anything. It's just there, being a building. A menacing building, sure, but menacing architecture doesn't carry a narrative. You can't just point a camera at a hotel and call it storytelling.
A building that, to be fair, has a very creepy reputation. But after the 4th aerial pass, it's just real estate footage. You start evaluating the property. Good location. Close to downtown. Shame about the water tank situation.
Number 4. Worst roommate ever. Netflix 2022. 5 episodes covering multiple roommate horror stories. Each story is told in a single episode with the exact same structure, setup, conflict, resolution. It's like a template. Fill in the names. Fill in the city. Hit print.
The padding here's in the framing. Each episode opens with a 4-minute recap of the previous story. But the stories are unrelated. Different roommates, different cities, different crimes. There's no narrative thread connecting them. So you're recapping something that has no bearing on what you're about to watch. It's like a book club where each member read a different book, but they all have to summarize anyway.
So you're watching a recap of a story you just finished that has nothing to do with the story you're about to start. It's almost impressive in its pointlessness. Someone made a creative decision to include recaps for an anthology series. That's not an accident. That's a choice. Someone sat in an edit bay and said, "Yes, the audience needs to be reminded of the Milwaukee roommate situation before we tell them about the Sacramento roommate situation."
It's padding by anthology. The series title is doing work the content can't. Worst Roommate Ever sounds like a unified concept, but it's just 5 standalone documentaries bundled together and called a series. The title is a promise the format doesn't keep.
And each one is about 45 minutes when the actual story is 25. The rest is establishing shots of apartments, hallways, doors closing slowly. You start to wonder if the director has a door thing. Is there a deeper meaning to the door? Is the door a metaphor? No. It's just a door. Closing. Slowly.
The door close. The slow door close with a click. It's in every episode. Multiple times. It's the signature shot of the series. Not the interviews, not the evidence, not the resolution. The door closing. That's what you'll remember.
The Andy Warhol Diaries. Netflix, 2022. 6 episodes for a subject who lived a fascinating life and produced an enormous body of work. The material exists for 6 episodes. The series just doesn't use it well. Warhol's life is rich. The art scene, the factory, the shooting, the later years. There's a 6-episode series in there. This just isn't it.
The central gimmick is an AI-generated voice reading Warhol's diaries. And it's interesting for about 20 minutes. Then each episode re-narrates the same biographical beats from a slightly different angle. Episode 4 is 70% footage from Warhol's films shown in full, uncut, with minimal commentary. You're not learning about Warhol, you're watching Warhol's films, which, if you wanted to do that, you could just watch Warhol's films.
You're watching Warhol's films, not clips. The films, long stretches of them. And the AI voice is saying something vague about authenticity, while a screen test plays for 8 minutes. The screen test is just a person sitting in a chair, looking at the camera, for 8 minutes, which is a valid artistic experience in a gallery setting. But you're on your couch, with a remote, and the fast-forward button is right there.
The series could have been 3 episodes. Tight, focused, illuminating. Instead, it's 6 episodes of beautifully shot vibes, but vibes. Vibes don't sustain 6 hours of television. Vibes sustain about 90 minutes, and then you need some facts.
The Warhol estate clearly gave access, and the filmmakers couldn't say no to any of it. They got the keys to the archive, and they lost their minds. Every scrap of footage felt precious. Every diary entry felt essential. And the discipline of selection, which is what editing is, just evaporated.
And the absolute worst offender on this list. There are books, there are movies, there are other documentaries. What's new here?
Instead, Netflix turned it into 7 episodes, and you can feel the stretch in every frame. The padding mechanisms are so numerous, they deserve their own list. The tapes are a finite resource, and the series treats them like an infinite one.
The accusation that she fed her husband to the tigers, it's introduced in episode 1, revisited in episode 2, repeated in episode 3, relitigated in episode 4, and by episode 7 you've heard the same speculation with 0 new evidence so many times that you could recite it from memory. The series treats this one accusation like it's the central mystery of a detective novel, but there's no detective work, there's just repetition.
Carol Baskin killed her husband. Yes, we know. You told us. You showed us the same photographs, the same missing person poster, the same interview clips. Nothing new is added across 7 episodes, but the series treats the accusation like a revelation every single time. It's the documentary equivalent of a friend who tells you the same gossip every time you see them, hoping you'll be shocked again.
Second, the Joe Exotic music videos. These are shown in full multiple times.
Atmosphere isn't information. Atmosphere is the seasoning. You can't serve a plate of seasoning and call it a meal.
Number 1. The Worst Offender, Tiger King, Murder, Mayhem, and Madness. Netflix 2020, 7 episodes, plus a follow-up season, for a story that's fundamentally eccentric zoo owner has feud with rival.
The platonic ideal of runtime as business decision. This series was originally greenlit as a single documentary. Then Netflix saw the viral potential and expanded it to 7 episodes. Let that sink in. The entire story was conceived as a feature-length film, one documentary, 90 to 120 minutes, and then someone looked at the footage and said, "What if we made it 7 times longer?"
The Hollywood Reporter confirmed this. It was conceived as a feature-length doc. Then someone at Netflix said, "Make it a series," and suddenly there are 7 hours of Joe Exotic.
The padding is industrial grade. Episode 2 is entirely about a presidential campaign that went nowhere. Not a serious campaign. Just a guy filed paperwork and nothing happened. For 50 minutes. You watch Joe Exotic stand in front of a banner. You watch him talk to a camera. You watch people say, "Yeah, he ran for president." And then the episode ends. That's it. That's the whole episode.
Episode 4 features a 20-minute music video sequence. Joe Exotic's music videos, played in full, with commentary from people saying, "Yeah, he made music videos." The commentary isn't analysis. It's not context. It's just confirmation that the music videos exist, which we know because we're watching them.
The recaps at the top of each episode average 4 minutes. 4 minutes, 7 times. That's nearly half an hour of recap across the series. You could watch an entire sitcom episode in the time you spend being reminded what you just saw. A full episode of The Office. Gone. Consumed by recaps of Tiger Drama.
The same aerial shots of the zoo appear in 6 of 7 episodes. Same zoo, same angle, same tigers. The tigers aren't doing anything new, they're just being tigers. Which is fine for tigers, but not for narrative momentum. Tigers are majestic creatures. They don't deserve to be B-roll filler.
And here's the thing. Tiger King is entertaining. It's watchable. That's what makes it The Worst Offender. It proves the model works. You can take 90 minutes of story, stretch it to 7 hours with recaps and music videos and dead-end subplots, and people will watch the whole thing because the central figure is compelling and the episodes autoplay. It's the proof of concept for a business model that's bad for audiences. It demonstrates that padding, done with enough flair, is commercially viable. And that's terrifying for the future of documentary filmmaking.
It's the perfect crime. The series is padded beyond belief, but the padding is fun. So Netflix gets the viewing hours and the audience doesn't revolt. And now every producer in town is trying to find the next Tiger King, a story just weird enough that you can stretch it to 7 episodes and nobody will complain until it's too late. They're not looking for good stories. They're looking for stretchy stories, stories with enough eccentricity to survive being watered down to 7 times their natural length.
The follow-up season is even worse. 3 more episodes that add nothing. The story was over, but Netflix ordered more, so they made more. That's the model in its purest form. Not, is there more story to tell, but can we produce more hours of content? The question isn't narrative, it's logistical.
Comparison to other platforms is instructive here. HBO's The Jinx, 2015, is 6 episodes and earns every minute. Genuine twists, real narrative density, the runtime builds tension rather than dissipating it. Every episode advances the story in a way that makes you need to see the next one, not because of a cliffhanger trick, but because information is actually being revealed.
Apple's The Me You Can't See is 5 episodes, but each covers a different subject, so there's no padding. The episode count reflects the scope. 5 episodes, 5 subjects, 5 complete narrative arcs, no recaps, no reused footage. Just structure that matches content.
Amazon's Lularich is 4 episodes and could have been 2. Same pattern as Netflix. But the difference is volume. Netflix produces 10 times more docuseries than any other platform, so the ratio of padded to tight is dramatically worse. You notice it because it's everywhere. It's not one bad series. It's an ecosystem of padding, a whole genre built on stretching.
So we've named the worst. What do we do about it? Here's how to spot a padded series in the first 10 minutes and save yourself hours.
Three tells. 1. If the opening credits are followed by a 3-minute recap of something that happened in the same episode, bail. That's not structure, that's desperation. A series that needs to recap itself within the same episode is a series that doesn't trust its own material.
2. If the first talking head says it was a case that would change everything, without specifying what everything means or what actually changed, that's empty rhetoric. The series is promising narrative weight it can't deliver. It's writing a check the runtime can't cash.
3. If you see a drone shot of a town within the first 5 minutes, the story is being stretched. A drone shot that early means the filmmakers are buying time before they have to tell you anything. They're stalling. They're saying, look at this nice town, because they can't yet say, here's why this town matters.
The underlying incentive is straightforward. Netflix pays producers per completed hour of content. A 4-part series at 50 minutes each is 200 minutes of content. That's a higher payout than a 90-minute documentary. The padding is rational for producers. It's terrible for viewers, but it's rational. You can't blame a producer for responding to the incentives the platform created. You can blame the platform for creating the incentives.
And the metric that drives its viewing hours. Platforms care about total hours watched, not completion rate, not satisfaction. A padded series that people half-watch for 6 hours generates better metrics than a tight 90-minute documentary that everyone finishes and loves. The half-watch series looks better on the quarterly report. That's the grim math.
The solution would be for platforms to pay per project, not per hour. But that won't happen while viewing hours are the number that matters to shareholders. Shareholders don't care if you finish the series. They care if you started it and let it run.
So what can listeners actually do? Practical strategy, watch the first episode. If it ends without a significant story development, not a cliffhanger, not a tease, but an actual development, skip to the last episode. Most padded series front-load the story in episode 1 and episode 4, with episodes 2 and 3 being filler. The middle episodes are the marshmallow center, all fluff, no substance.
The recap skip strategy. Watch episode 1. Skip to the final episode. You'll miss some atmosphere and a few talking heads repeating themselves, but you'll get the entire story. You'll know what happened, who did it, and what it meant. Everything else is just doors closing slowly and drone shots of highways.
And you'll save yourself 4 hours. 4 hours you could spend watching something that actually earns its runtime, or reading a book, or going outside. The possibilities are endless once you stop letting Netflix steal your time with aerial footage of buildings.
The business incentives aren't changing anytime soon, but maybe the audience can. Maybe enough people start skipping the middle episodes and the metrics shift. Maybe the platforms notice that nobody watches episodes 2 and 3 of a 4-part series. That would send a signal in the only language they speak, data.
The question I keep coming back to, as streaming platforms compete harder for attention, does the padding get worse, or do audiences start rejecting overextended series? There are early signs of a countertrend. The rise of limited series. The staircase on HBO at 8 episodes, but with real narrative density, things that actually earn their length, suggests some portion of the audience is getting wise. People are starting to recognize the difference between length and depth.
But the counter-counter-trend is AI. AI-generated content could make padding even cheaper. Imagine a docu-series where the same footage is re-narrated by AI in different styles to fill episodes. Different voice, different music, same shots. The worst is yet to come. We haven't seen the floor yet. We're still on the stairs.
That's bleak.
It's the logical endpoint of the incentives we just described. If padding is profitable and AI makes padding nearly free, the rational outcome is more padding. Infinite padding. A docu-series that never ends because it costs nothing to keep generating new variations of the same content. The same drone shot, the same reenactment, the same talking head, narrated by an AI voice that never gets tired, never asks for a raise, never insists that the story is over.
I'm going to make a prediction. On the record. Within 2 years, a major streaming platform will release a docuseries where at least one full episode is AI-generated filler, re-narrated footage, synthetic B-roll, no new reporting, and the backlash will be the thing that finally forces a conversation about runtime standards.
I'll go further. Within 18 months, and it'll be Netflix. They have the most to gain and the most content to fill. They're already experimenting with AI in other areas. The jump to AI-generated documentary filler isn't a leap. It's a small step. A shuffle, really.
That's aggressive. But I can't say you're wrong. The pieces are all there. The incentive, the technology, the precedent. Someone's going to do it.
And when they do, we'll do a follow-up countdown. The top 10 most egregious AI-padded docuseries. I'm sure it'll be a long list. Probably too long. Probably padded, ironically.
We want to thank our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running. If you have a prompt you want us to tackle, a weird one, a specific one, a rant disguised as a question, send it to prompts@myweirdprompts.com. We read everyone, even the long ones, especially the long as they earn their length.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Review us wherever you listen. It helps people find the show. And unlike the docuseries we just eviscerated, we promise our episode lengths are justified.
We'll be back soon. Don't watch the recap. There's no recap. That's the whole point.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.